Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome to the book club. For I know the thought I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. Our Becky Book Amelia Book Club Talk Live Radio Show is hosted by Becky G. For those of you who don't know, the owner of the lovely, distinct voice that you're hearing currently on Blog Talk Radio. Becky is the host of Becky Book Club, and she is definitely at home on the microphone as she introduced the world to great authors and share from her vast collection of great books to authors around the world. Come be a part of the greatest show on Live Talk Radio by dialing into the show at 347-205-9535 at the preset scheduled time of the show. Becky Book Amelia Book Club featured topic for this episode is Faking It, and this book is by Cora Carmack, for those of you who are also avid readers and would like to check this title out, Faking It, by Cora Carmack. This is a hot new adult title from New York Times best-selling author of Losing It. A funny thing happened the other day when I was doing a previous segment of this review, and don't get excited because I will bring you up to speed to where I am tonight before I go into the part of tonight's episode. But a day ago, I miscalled my feature topic, Losing It, not realizing at the time that Cora did actually have a book entitled Losing It. But for the sake of clarity, I am discussing, reviewing, if you will, Faking It by Cora Carmack. Now, as I said, to bring you up to speed, a portion of this book that I discussed was entitled Cad. Now, some of us remember a Cad as a character who is, you know, different, difficult, full of himself, et cetera, but this young man's name is Cad, and he is the main topic of the first chapter of Faking It. Now, Cad is a young man who was involved with a young lady named Bliss. And for whatever reason, maybe because he's a glutton for punishment, as some people say, or just want to get another look at his ex, I don't know. But at any rate, he has been invited to a coffee shop by Bliss and her current boyfriend, Garrick. And so they're meeting at this coffee shop, and as he's walking toward the coffee shop, he's thinking about, you know, how he really don't like the fact that he did something to mess up this relationship. He would much rather still be in a relationship with Bliss himself, but at any rate, he is not because of whatever happened. They're no longer together. And so he's walking toward this coffee shop, and in the distance, he sees his ex-girlfriend with her hand in the pocket of her current boyfriend, and something just goes all over him. I mean, he really is looking for a reason to dislike this guy, but unfortunately for him, he's a nice guy. This guy has actually helped him get into Templeton College and has done everything he can to help him have a good life. So he really can't find a reason not to like him except for the fact that he has the woman in his life that he would really prefer to have in his life. Okay, moving right along to chapter 2. Now, chapter 2 is entitled Max. Now, Max is about a young lady named Maxine, and she happens to be at the very same coffee shop where Cad and his party is. Now, Cad and his party has been at the coffee shop, and they've had their little, you know, entourage and introduce themselves to what's going on in their life to current time. And Bliss and Garrett had to go off because during the conversation at the coffee shop, Bliss received a phone call from a friend girl, and she and Garrett had to run off to assist this girlfriend. Unfortunately for Cat, he just was not up to leaving the coffee shop, so he's still there lingering at the coffee shop with a book and a cup of coffee. In comes Max and her boyfriend. They're both tattooed to the hilt. And Max, which is short for Maxine, is there with her boyfriend, and they're hanging out, and they're talking about their relationship and so forth and so on. So many times, you know, young women are not really happy with the way things are going in relationship, but they'll put up with it for good sex, for a better way of saying it. I mean, let the truth be told and shame the devil. And so that was kind of where Max and her beau, Mace, were. He was, like I said, tattooed to the hilt, long, scraggly hair, you know, tough boy down to a science. He was in a rock band. You know, he was just not the type of guy that Max's mom and dad wanted for her. They wanted a clean-cut guy. And as a matter of fact, Max has told her parents that she's in a relationship. Her new relationship is with a librarian. He's a clean-cut guy, you know. He reads. He's not into drugs or rock and roll or any of that stuff. So mom and dad are very excited about meeting Max's new boyfriend. This story is told, this part of the story is told coming up to the Thanksgiving holiday. And Max's mom and dad have prepared to have dinner with the family, inviting the children and their significant others or husbands or whatever. And so they have invited Max to Thanksgiving dinner. But their older daughter, who's married, has been called away to an emergency otherwise. And so the dinner kind of has been canceled. Little does Max know. She's received a call while at the coffee shop with her beau from her parents, telling her that they really are looking forward to seeing her and her new librarian boyfriend during the Thanksgiving holiday. But unfortunately, they've had to cancel this holiday dinner because the other children and their mates are not able to come because of family emergencies. And so Max is getting ready to apologize and say, well, you know, I'm sorry that we won't be able to see each other this time, maybe next time, next holiday or whatever. And so the next words that come out of Bob's mouth is, well, Dad and I are going to come over to see you. She's thinking sometime in the near future, maybe a few days from now, a few weeks from now, next month, next year, the sooner, the further away, the better. And the next thing Mom says is, we're right around the corner. We're coming to see you right now. And as I said before, Max was in the coffee shop. Well, this causes her to drop her coffee. Cat is there, and he sees all of this. The boyfriend just kind of takes her by the hand, Mace does, pulls her away from the coffee, keeps right on stepping, acting like nothing is going on. And so finally she says to her parents, you know, I can't do dinner right now because I'm really busy. You know, my librarian boyfriend is working. He's not available. And in the middle of that statement, Mace says, no, I'm not. I'm available. I imagine she probably gave him one eye rolling and kind of regathered herself as she realized her parents were right around the corner and they were fast approaching. So she beats it out of there to go to her apartment, which evidently was pretty close to the coffee shop because she got there before her parents did. And she asked her boyfriend, who doesn't look anything like a librarian, to leave. Well, he leaves the coffee shop. They direct him, Max does, directs her parents to the coffee shop. And now she's standing there looking at the broken coffee cup and coffee all over the place, looking around the coffee shop like a lost pup because now she realizes that her Barbie dad knows her hangouts, coming to her right now within a matter of minutes, And she's had to send this boyfriend off who looks nothing like what she's told her parents her boyfriend looks like. So she turns around in the coffee shop looking, you know, kind of helpless, and she sees Kat. Now, Kat gets the bill for this librarian boyfriend that she's told her parents she has. So she walks over to this total stranger, and she quickly explains her dilemma, and she asks him, will he pretend to be her boyfriend? He looks the part. He's clean cut. He has beautiful dark hair, according to her, gorgeous, you know, dark eyes. He is really drop-dead gorgeous. She, on the other hand, has this fire engine red hair that she's gotten out of the bottle. She has tattoos going up her neck. You know, she has all these things that she knew her parents would not appreciate in her, but yet she's living on her own, and she's doing herself. She's doing her thing. So that's where we are today, Kat pretending to be the boyfriend. And so Kat listens to her plight, looks at this gorgeous redhead, and decides, yeah, I'll be your knight in shining armor. I'll assist you with your dilemma. And so her parents eventually show up at the coffee shop a few moments after she starts this, you know, requesting of help from Kat, if you will. The parents show up. And so mom and dad comes in, and they exchange hugs. And for Maxine, it's a whole lot longer than she would like. And mom actually calls her Maxine. She knows Max prefers to be referred to as Max, but she insists on calling her Maxine. And Maxine is kind of, you know, looking over her shoulder, looking at Kat like, oh, my God, will she ever stop hugging me? Well, when the parents walk up to the table, Kat stands up, extends his hand, and mom gives him a hug. And mom hugs him and hugs him and hugs him and hugs him. Now, this had been Mace, which he could never have been introduced to her parents because he just doesn't fit the bill. But if this had been Mace, he probably would have pushed mom away from him. And that is one of the reasons why Maxine could not let her parents meet Mace. So we're at this coffee shop. We're meeting the parents. Kat is really not living up to his name. He's being the perfect gentleman. And mom really, really likes Kat. And, you know, she is talking to him, and he's saying all the right things. And so eventually in the conversation, mom wants to have some kind of dinner or what have you with Kat and Max. And Max really doesn't want to do that because she just met this guy. She doesn't really know him like that. She don't know how he's going to behave, you know what I mean? But mom is insistent that, you know, we couldn't have the family dinner for Thanksgiving, so let's just go out to dinner maybe this evening and do our thing. And Max is, you know, trying to find a way to wiggle out of it. And in the meantime, Kat graciously accepts the invitation. And so they're going out to dinner, and she's wondering if it's going to be really crazy. Yeah, I forgot to say earlier that, you know, during the time of the parents coming on, and I told you about the tattoos up and down one side of Max's neck, she just took off, you know, a scarf that Kat had around his neck and wrapped it around her neck so that she could hide those tattoos and her mom would never be the wiser for it. Well, having introduced them to her nice, adorable boyfriend and all of that, Max is feeling a little better, but yet at the same time she's a little concerned because now mom has asked that she and this new man go out to dinner with her and dad. And she's trying to figure out how in the world am I going to go out with this boy, this new boyfriend that he's really technically not my boyfriend. I mean, she was so desperate to have a clean-cut guy that she even offered to pay this guy. And he looked at her like, you know what, I don't want you to pay me. I will do this for you to rescue you from whatever, but the only payment I want from you is for you to go out to dinner. Now, if you were to ever purchase this book, you will see a picture of this flaming redhead and this, what she calls, gorgeous young man with dark hair and dark eyes and, you know, a mysterious, mischievous look on his face, you know, in a position, a supine position, if you will, with all of their clothing on. So you just imagine, because this is an adult book, all of the great adventures that are going to happen in these stories as they unveil themselves. I mean, there are 30-plus chapters in this book, and each one has a cute little adventure, if you will, hinting at, you know, sexual escapades, if you will. And so, you know, this young lady who wrote this book, as I said before, Cora Carmack, she is a New York Times bestseller author. She's one of their top authors. She's written quite a few books about, you know, various topics, and she basically writes in the adult genre. And I hope I pronounced that correctly so that I don't get any calls for those of you who are so inclined to, you know, get the red pen out and do all those things. But this is a great little book. And so we will start real quick for the last 13 minutes that we have, somewhere at the end of that third chapter, to kind of bring you up to what happened in the third chapter. Because as I said, there seems to be something that always happens in these chapters of this great little book. And by the way, I give this New York bestseller a thumbs up for being true to its name, genre's name, for having, you know, excitement and sexual escapades and the whole nine, you know, a lot of intrigue and interest, and that it, you know, it reads, it's an easy read, and you get a lot of meat, for lack of a better way of putting it, in reading this book. So that's where we'll start off real briefly, and we will give you some information as to how you can get this book at the end of this discussion. So all my parents know is that we met at the library. You're nice and sweet and wholesome. My parents are crazy conservatives, so no joke about me taking my your clothes off. We've been dating for a few weeks. Nothing complicated. I haven't told them anything else, so it should be pretty easy to sell. For practice hands, we started smudging off some of the dark that lined my eyes. She pulled her hair forward so that it covered this array of piercings in her ears. What about you? What do you do? I'm an actor. She rolled her eyes. They'll hate that as much as they hate me being a musician, but it will have to do. She kept fussing with her makeup, moving down her hair, looking around like she wished she had a hat or something to cover it. I placed a hand on her shoulder and said, "You look beautiful. Don't worry." Her expression froze, and she looked up at me like I was speaking Swahili. She didn't look like a Mackenzie. She took a shuddering breath and then stood to face the woman I supposed was her mother. I rose with her and let my arm stretch across her shoulder. She seemed frazzled, which was funny because up until now, confidence was practically running out of her pores like honey. I mean, she'd asked a complete stranger to pretend to be her boyfriend. She had seemed fearless. Parents were apparently her kryptonite. I looked at the middle-aged couple approaching us. The man was balding with wire-framed glasses, and the woman's hair was graying at her temples. The hands between them were intertwined, and their outer arms were reaching forward like they expected their daughter to run up for a group hug. She looked like she'd rather run off a cliff. I smiled. This I could do. I gave her a shoulder squeeze and said, "Everything is going to be okay, Boo Boo Bear." "Oh, honey, what atrocious thing have you done to your hair? I told you to stop using those dyes out of the box." Mackenzie was biting down on her lip so hard as her mother pulled her forward into a hug that I was surprised she didn't draw blood. Her father took over, and she had to let go of my hand. I stepped to the side and reached a hand out to her mother. "It's so nice to meet you, Miss." The words were already out of my mouth before I realized I had no idea what Mackenzie's last name was. Hell, I hadn't even known her name was Mackenzie. Her mother took my hand and was looking at me with her head cocked sideways, waiting for me to finish my sentence. I saw Mackenzie wiggle out of her father's hug next to me, her face full of slowly dawning horror. "Damn it," I put on my best smile and said, "You know, I've heard so much about you from Mackenzie that I feel like I could just call you Mom." Then I moved in for a hug. He was hugging my mother, a total stranger. I could only handle a few hugs a year from her without being smothered, and he was wrapped up in her boa constrictor arms for 3, 4, 5 seconds. It was still going. And it was a full-on hug, not one of those awkward side ones that I gave my dad. Jesus Christ, her head was tucked under his chin. The seconds seemed to expand into lifetimes, and his wide eyes caught mine over my mother's head. From the way my mother was latched on, he was never going to get free. It was like one of those sad stories where a little kid smothers a cat because he hugged it too hard. He laughed and patted her on the back. Unlike my laugh around my parents, he managed to pull it off without sounding like he was being held at gunpoint. Finally, after a nearly 10-second hug, she released him. At 10 seconds, I would have been hyperventilated. Then again, she probably wouldn't have let go of me after 10 seconds. I'm convinced. She thinks if she could just hug me long enough, she'd squeeze all the devil's influence out of me. He stayed there, still in hugging range, and said, "It's so wonderful of both of you to make this impromptu trip. Mackenzie won't say it, but she misses you both terribly." Now I could just imagine that right about this point, Mackenzie is wanting to choke her new imagined boyfriend. And, of course, Mackenzie cringes when he called her Mackenzie, and her mother beamed. I didn't know if her aversion to Max was just because she thought it was a boy's name or if calling me by my nickname reminded her of Alexander, of Alex. She looked at me over his shoulder, and there were tears in her eyes. 15 seconds, and he had her crying. Fucking tears of joy. Were my ex-boyfriends really all that bad in comparison to him? Okay, so I had made the mistake of introducing them to Jake. He insisted on them calling him by his nickname, Scissors. But that was a low point. And it had mostly been to piss them off. Not all of them had been that bad. My pretend boyfriend turned to my father and said, "Sir, I'm Cad Winston. You've raised an amazing daughter." My father shook his hand and said, "Really? Really," he said, "really. No, thank you." I know it took him a full 5 seconds before he smiled, like me being amazing was his doing. He said, "It's nice to meet you, son." They've already married me off. I needed to sit down. I didn't even say anything as I moved toward the table, but my pretend boyfriend, Cad, must have some kind of weird sixth sense. He was at my side in seconds, pulling out my chair for me. My parents stayed standing a few feet away, staring like they wanted to preserve this picture of us in their memories forever. Cat grabbed my hand and laced our fingers together. His skin on mine caused a jolt of electricity to run up my arm. I've been there, done that. It shook all of the exasperated thoughts out of my head, and I sat staring at him as my parents stood staring at us. Mom pulled out a handkerchief. Maybe someday I'd be able to look back and laugh at the ridiculousness of this moment. Maybe someday I'd also get on a subway car that didn't smell like urine. The future had much to look forward to. Finally, Dad turned to Mom and said, "Let's get some coffee, Betty. Cat, Mackenzie, we'll join you in a moment." I waited until my parents were in line, and then I turned on him, barely containing the urge to do physical harm. What the hell was that? His brows furrowed. His head turned to the side, and our hands were still laced together. Why hadn't I pulled my hand away yet? I was meeting your parents. I tried to hold on to my anger, but really, boys should not have such gorgeous eyes and long lashes. An unfamiliar heat crept up my neck, and I knew I was blushing. I was not a blushing kind of girl. I ripped gaze away from his face and then my hand out of his. My voice was shaky, and all my anger had fled when I said, more like ruining my chance of them ever liking one of my actual boyfriends. It was easier when I wasn't looking at him. My thoughts became clear. I mean, you hugged my mom. Hugs are like crack to that woman. I'm sorry. You didn't tell me your last name, so I improvised. I crossed my arms over my chest. He had done a pretty good job, and my parents seemed convinced and happy. He was clearly good at this kind of thing. That should have made me less nervous. It didn't. I still felt like I was going into cardiac arrest at any second. Just don't hug her again. Heavens forbid, she started expecting me to follow his lead. I just need to survive this without them getting suspicious. No need to go for the Oscar. And the last name is Miller. Of course, the name grated against my ears. It had been years since someone besides my family called me that, and somehow I hated it even more now. I was almost snarling as I said, "Don't call me Mackenzie. It's Max." Well, that's a great point and a great place to stop. And as you see, as I said, there's some stuff going on in this great little book entitled Faking It by Cora Carmack. Now, you can make your own decision and come to your own conclusion about the book, but I give it a thumbs up. And because this is Becky Book Club, I get to call the shots. You know, someone said that I shouldn't call my name so much and say my name so much. But then some other person said, absolutely. You know, drop your name as much as possible. Let them know whose show it is. Well, I'll let you come to your own conclusion about whether I'm saying Becky Book Club too much or not. But at any rate, this is Becky Book Club. I am your host, Becky G. And the review topic for tonight has been Faking It by Cora Carmack. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for your listening support. Good night, all.